Good morning to counsel and everyone else. We appreciate counsel's forbearance, and we're ready to hear now case number 07-3700, Paul C. Wozni against Grahams. Mr. Boucher.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Paul Boucher. I am the attorney for Paul Wozni, the petitioner in this case. The dates of importance in this particular case are laid out in great detail in the brief, and I will not dwell on them in any significant respect. There are a couple dates, however, that I think are at least mentionable. September 11th, 2001 is when Mr. Wozni found himself charged with 9 counts of serious sex crimes in the state of Wisconsin. The next really important date would be March 6, 2002, and many of my comments here will be addressing that particular date because that was a plea hearing when Mr. Wozni entered pleas of no contest to three of those counts. The 6 remaining counts were what is called read into the record. Ultimately, Mr. Wozni received a period of term of 70-year confinement, for 25 years confinement, 45 years extended supervision. The relief that Mr. Wozni is seeking is respectfully requesting that this court find that the district court in Eastern District of Wisconsin erroneously concluded that the Wisconsin Court of Appeals did not unreasonably apply federal law as it relates in Mr. Wozni's case. The issues in this case are many, but primarily two. First, and in both of those issues, we'll focus on the plea hearing that occurred on March 6, 2002. First, this is really a totality case, if you will, that the reviewing court and any court should review all of the claimed inaccuracies or all of the claimed errors in totality and not in a vacuum and one by one. And then Mr. Wozni's case, that is important. Dealing with each individual issue one by one and dismissing it does not address the totality and all the circumstances together. Voluntariness, ultimately, of Mr. Wozni's plea is the bottom line. And that voluntariness can only be determined by considering all of the relevant circumstances that were present on March 6, 2002. And in this case, the two issues that I'd like to at least briefly address. One is trial counsel's preparation and conduct at the plea hearing. This, again, is indicated was an extremely serious case. 9 counts have filed against Mr. Wozni. The plea questionnaire that is also in the brief was filled out and gone over on March 6, 2002. Mr. Wozni was in custody of the authorities for a significant period of time previous to that. But it was March 6, 2002, almost immediately preceding his entering his pleas of no contest. He met with his trial counsel in what is called the bullpen or a small anteroom off the major court area. And Mr. Wozni was in custody, and he was conversing with his counsel at that time for the first time relative to the plea questionnaire and the entry of the pleas through a small plexiglass window, not unusual in almost every court in certainly in the nation. There was no personal contact. And at this point in time, it's clear that Mr. Wozni's trial counsel, at best, giving Mr. Wozni's trial counsel the benefit of every doubt, summarized what is called the elements of the offense. There was no possibility of his trial counsel handling or discussing with Mr. Wozni at that location the jury instructions that were attached to the plea questionnaire, which I believe was proper procedure. However, unfortunately, on March 6th, it was not. On March 5th or March 4th, that is the time that his trial counsel should have spent with Mr. Wozni. In this particular case, the 15 or 20 minutes that was ongoing was through a plexiglass window. There was no opportunity to pass the documents through. And the testimony that obviously came out subsequent thereto indicates at best it was a discussion or a summary. There was no exchanging of it. It was some thought he might have even held the documents up to the plexiglass window, but later on that found out that that was not the case. Almost immediately after that, Mr. Wozni, as is very normal in probably every court, is rushed into the court area itself. And at that point is the first time Mr. Wozni had the opportunity to see the plea questionnaire, which is in the brief. And at that point, he never read it, and it's really undisputed that he had the chance to read it because he was just simply being summarized. However, he did sign it. Seconds before, he was standing in front of a judge just like you, now pleading no contest to 3 felony counts, ultimately leading to a 70-year sentence. Why Mr. Wozni's trial counsel did not spend additional time with him, we don't know. But the bottom line is, at no point during that preparation, and I use that in quotes and very loosely for this plea, did Mr. Wozni's trial counsel explain to him the elements of the 3 additional offenses he was pleading guilty to or no contest to. These are 3 different offenses Mr. Wozni was pleading no contest to. Not all the same. All of them are somewhat complicated, as indicated in the jury instructions. But Mr. Wozniak's trial counsel let him down and ultimately let the court down, because as the next segue as we move into this is after Mr. Wozniak left the bullpen and now for the first time was in front of Judge Gibbs and had quickly signed a jury questionnaire without a chance to review it or the jury instructions. The trial court then stepped up.
There's not much to review on the jury waiver, though.
No, there's not, Judge. There's really not a lot there to review on the jury questionnaire, yeah. on the plea questionnaire, but there is enough, and certainly Mr. Wozniak indicated subsequently in a colloquy that did occur that he did review it, and frankly, I wonder what he did review because of the circumstances under which it was reviewed. But subsequently, the trial court now relied, unfortunately or fortunately, and practically speaking, that's probably how it occurs in most trial courts. That judge relied upon trial counsel basically to ask Mr. Wozniak, do you understand what you're pleading no contest to, and more importantly in this case, the elements of the offense. All three offenses were different. All three had different elements. Some not that complicated, some are complicated. Trial courts obviously have full calendars, and they are rushed through this. I understand the practical problems with this. But this court in several cases has reviewed similar circumstances. The Frye case was one of those decisions where the court did review, in fact, the plea colloquy that did or did not occur in the Frye case. And in this particular case, Mr. Wozniak never admitted his guilt. While that in and of itself is not determinative in this particular case, I concede that. But it is nonetheless a factor that the Frye court found to be important and also bears upon the fact that the elements that are essential to his understanding and the voluntariness of this plea were never explained to him. If there's a sad part in this case, it simply could have been taken care of in a matter of minutes, if less than that, by simply having the trial court ask Mr. Wozniak, what is it you're pleading no contest to? What is it you think you did? Counsel, did you explain the elements to Mr. Wozniak? Yes, I did. Tell me. What did you tell Mr. Wozniak? That didn't happen here. It was a perfunctory yes and no question, very routine questions. Did you explain the elements of the offense to Mr. Wozniak? Yes, I did. The next question should have been from the court, what did you tell him? We don't know at this point in time. In addition, a summary paraphrasing in a series of routine questions, which occurs in every court in the entire nation, I understand that. But in this particular case, and while it's not determinative of how much effort a trial court should put into when accepting a plea, it is still relevant that everybody in that courtroom knew for a fact that Mr. Wozniak was going to be going to prison for a significant period of time. I'm not indicating, Judge, that that has anything to do necessarily in a vacuum as to how much effort or what should be done constitutionally when taking a plea. But it does make one scratch their head as to why they didn't slow down in this particular circumstance, why they didn't take time to personally address Mr. Wozniak and ask him specifically. The plea questionnaire is short. The plea hearing should be longer. I believe the plea hearing in this case is 9 or 10 pages long. 2 or 3 of those pages are taken up by niceties and then ultimately reading the charges that Mr. Wozniak was now pleading no contest to. So there's
what should we take from the fact that he apologized to the victim?
I'm sorry, Judge, I didn't
What hear. Should we take from the fact that he apologized to the victims at sentencing?
That he did something wrong. He knew, in fact, that he did something that he needs to be held responsible for. But taking the fact of an apology at sentencing and trying to have that in a retroactive approach to indicate at the plea hearing his plea was voluntary, I think stretches the limits. But it does indicate he's remorseful for what he did or in fact, what he thinks he did. On this particular plea hearing record, Judge, I don't think we actually know what he was pleading no contest to because the record is silent. Obviously,
Counselor, can I ask you this? Isn't it true that he did affirm it on the plea agreement in open court?
He affirmed the fact, Judge,
and,
that he read
wait,
the plea
and further,
questionnaire.
And he did not contest having committed the crimes?
He pled no contest. That is
yes,
absolutely correct.
Yes, he didn't contest the crimes, and he admitted what was in the plea hearing report.
He admitted that the plea questionnaire that is attached to the brief, that he reviewed that and that he signed it. He admitted he pled no contest to the offenses. There was no indication that he had the intent to sexual arouse or gratify. There was no indication on his part that he even knew what the facts were. And I know he does. He did
read over the plea agreement and admit the facts contained therein and signed it.
The plea questionnaire was reviewed, Judge, with him while he was in the bullpen, and then he signed it in court. We don't dispute that.
That was the plea agreement.
It's called a plea questionnaire, but
isn't it referred to as the plea agreement?
No, that was a plea questionnaire.
Yeah.
There was an agreement that was reached between.
Right, and didn't he admit that and not contest it?
He was aware of the agreement that was brokered between his counsel and the government. Yes, Judge, he was. He knew that. Yeah. The problem here, however, is in addition to not going over the elements, which would have been just as perfunctory as some of the other questions that were asked, the judge could have, and in fact should have engaged in that personal colloquy, as the Stewart case and the Fry case indicate. While they're different slightly, nonetheless, there's not that personal dialogue that's missing here. I am totally well aware of the problems trial courts have and their calendar congestion. And I don't believe we need to adopt that type of strategy in every case. In this case, it should have been done, and it wasn't done. Finally is the factual basis. In this particular case, Mr. Wozniak was never asked by Judge Gibbs, do you believe or do you agree that there are sufficient facts for me to find you guilty? Because I'm going to find you guilty. If you plead no contest, you know I'm going to find you guilty, Mr. Wozniak. Do you know that? Well, not that exact question was asked, but anything approaching that was not. I notice my time has expired, and I appreciate the court's indulgence. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Booker. We'll hear now from Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Aaron O'Neill. I'm an assistant attorney general for the Wisconsin Department of Justice, and I'm appearing for the appellee in this matter, Warden Greg Grams. The issue presented on this appeal is whether Mr. Wozniak has demonstrated that the Wisconsin Court of Appeals either acted contrary to, unreasonably applied federal law, or based its decision on an unreasonable determination of the facts when it concluded that he knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily entered his no contest pleas to 3 child sexual assault charges.
I think it's fair to say that the court is very well aware of the standard of review, and your brief spends a great deal of time talking about it. I guess what we really need to know here is, why is this a disposition by the Wisconsin court reasonable? Frankly, it seems awful superficial.
The court, first relying on the state trial court's factual findings at the post-conviction proceedings, at Mr. Wozniak's motion to withdraw his no contest pleas, found as a matter of fact that, based on first Mr. Wozniak's assertion at the plea hearing that his counsel had reviewed the elements of the crimes with him, and two, based on trial counsel's testimony at the plea withdrawal hearing that he had gone over the elements with Mr. Wozniak, the State Court of Appeals, relying on those factual findings by the trial court, determined that counsel had in fact explained the elements to Mr. Wozniak under the standards of the ADPA and 2254E1, that factual determination is entitled to deference in this court, and Mr. Wozniak has the burden of showing that was unreasonable by clear and convincing evidence. He has pointed to some facts in the record demonstrating, particularly his own testimony at the plea withdrawal hearing, that some evidence that a court could reach a contrary determination. But again, because the state court found, based on the facts presented or in the state court record, that Mr. Wozniak's counsel had explained the elements to him, the Court of Appeals then went on to find that he knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily entered his plea. And under the AADPA, based on that factual finding, that is a reasonable determination or a reasonable application of federal law. Based on that argument, we just ask that the court affirm the district court's judgment denying Mr. Wozniak.
Help me out with this. The appellate court says the trial court here asked Wozniak whether his counsel had explained all the elements of each of the offenses to him. Wozniak responded that counsel had. Then there's a question here at the trial level. Did Mr. De La Rosa ever go over with you what the elements of the crimes to which you were pleading no contest were? No, he did not. We talked about the description of each of the charges and the numbers of the charges, and that's about all I know. Question, now, when I said elements, going back to March 6th of 2002, what did you believe the elements referred to? Answer, the description of the counts and the numbers of the accounts, the counts against me. Is that what the Court of Appeals was relying on?
No, they were relying. They found that to be not credible, or the state court found that Mr. Wozniak's testimony at the post-conviction proceedings to be not credible, and instead believed his trial counsel's testimony that he had, to the best of his memory, explained the elements to Mr. Wozniak before he entered his no contest pleas.
What was the Court of Appeals doing then?
Court of Appeals was relying on the state trial court's factual findings.
But it seems to be stating something that's contrary to the record. I'm on page 4 of your appendix, page 104. That's paragraph 6 at the top.
Okay.
And that sounds like just a mistaken rendition by the appellate court.
Are you talking about the first sentence of paragraph 6?
Yeah.
That, I think, is a reference to the plea hearing, where Mr. Wozniak indicated that his trial counsel had reviewed the elements with him before the hearing.
Not the post-conviction hearing?
Not the post-conviction
hearing, yes.
I see. You take that as relating to the post-conviction, rather to the actual
plea hearing. And it's, yeah, exactly. There are no more questions. I ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, have any time left? If you would like a minute, Mr. Booker, if you have something you'd like to add, please do.
Aspect, Your Honors, was the read-in offenses. There were multiple read-in offenses here, both the remaining 6 counts that Mr. Wozniak did not plead to. When there was a dispute at the plea hearing, those initially were going to be dismissed outright. Ultimately, there was explained they were going to be read in. More importantly, 7 counts from a neighboring county, Jefferson County, were going to be read in and considered by the trial judge for sentencing purposes and restitution. Those were not discussed. Those were not explained. And, in fact, that authorization for those read-ins from the neighboring county did not come until March 8th of 2002. I think that's just, again, one of those factors that feed into the not –
Did the judge factor that in the sentence he imposed?
The judge indicated subsequently that he did not. The judge did indicate during the plea questionnaire, during the plea hearing, that he was going to consider the read-in offenses for sentencing and for restitution. And by law, in fact, the judge may. Subsequently, Judge Gibbs did make some comments that – and forgive me, I don't have the transcript at my fingertips, but he wasn't going to punish him or use the reading offenses to enhance the sentencing. And it may be he did not, Judge. But the fact is they weren't even there until March 8th, the letter from the district attorney authorizing him. And finally, the nature of the charges that were read in, at least 3 of those counts were significantly legally and factually different from the counts Mr. Wozniak pled no contest to. Thank you very much for the additional time, Your Honors.
Thank you to both counsel for their fine presentations. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.